has taught me how to stand and fight for what I believe in. I guess that's just how I was raised.
Join that sexy thing for living way out here on the Survival Circle Network. Yep, Amy's back on weeknights except Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time with an hour of trivia, fun, and interesting stories. Join her for living way out here.
Turn it.
Welcome to the Shooting Bench. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you commentary and important updates on current events, as well as information on guns, training, preparedness, and other liberty-related issues. Let's get started. RAT, right now. All right, here we go. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. It's the 20-something, 25th of February.
For a bill that would let gun owners,
why do I have people talking on my
the constitutional carry bill
show
called,
here?
Just one of many.
I guess I could just let him go ahead and finish since I can't shut it off.
Restrictions on gun owners. News 5's Andy Cohen on the floor vote in the state Senate today. He's live from the state capitol in Denver. And Andy,
well, this is out of Colorado, so pay attention.
That it does, Rob. Opponents call it permitless carry, and a number of them showed up today to lobby against not only this bill, but also the other gun laws. But the bill's sponsor tells me that he thinks attitudes towards gun ownership in our state are changing.
Wearing orange and blue t-shirts, gun control advocates came to the state capitol to say no to a series of new gun bills.
These are removing systems, protocols that are in place that people go through before they gain a permit to go and then carry a weapon concealed. So if you remove those protocols, what safety measures do you have?
Among the proposals, a bill that would let teachers arm themselves, another that expands the Stand Your Ground law to include business owners, and the elimination of the ban on high-capacity magazines.
They seem to think that, you know, anybody should be able to walk around with a 30-round magazine or a 100-round drum. And these weapons of soldiers and war. These aren't things that should be in homes.
Jane Doherty's sister was the school counselor at Sandy Hook.
The young man that murdered my sister had easy access to multiple 30-round magazines.
In the state Senate today, a constitutional carry bill passed on a party-line vote.
In the state of Colorado, you can carry an open carry firearm, but if you put a coat on, just the process of putting that coat over that firearm, you could be guilty of a misdemeanor.
Amendments offered by Democrats to let the bill go to voters instead were defeated.
We're trying to make a bad bill at least acceptable.
Yeah.
And obviously the majority declined to even accept any of our amendments.
Sponsor Tim Neville doesn't think the bills are controversial. He thinks opponents need to consider the growing number of gun owners and changing attitudes about firearms.
People are starting to take a look and they're starting to realize that having a firearm is something that actually stops people from committing crimes. And it actually is it's a protection device. It's not, I think people are changing their attitude about that.
Now, all right,
given the current split and control between the...
That's enough of that. What that was, if you missed the first part of it, is that we are just one step closer here. We just about got everything we need to have constitutional carry in Colorado, which will make that the, what, 8th or 9th constitutional carry state, permitless carry state in the country. And there's a couple more that's working on it that are pretty close, too. So by the end of this year, we could have... Yeah, we could have at least a dozen, I think, pretty easily the way things are going. So, not a bad deal. We're catching up on gun laws regularly here. I'll tell you what, I've got a deal here I want to read to you. It's a little bit long, but it's very well, it's relevant to what's been going on. There's a letter, as you were. It's a letter that a lady wrote, an open letter to the FBI, and about Lavoie Finicum's murder. And she lays it out there pretty good, as I keep saying. There's an awakening happening, and it has got to be scaring these people. This is an open letter, nothing to hide. The lady that penned the letter and put it out, I don't know if she... Actually, she did say she sent... Her name's Kate Daly, and she said she did send it to him, plus put it on Facebook. She, like so many other people, Lavoie's murder has hit them so hard. I was with a group of people tonight at a restaurant. We were interviewing a candidate for constitutional sheriff in Navajo County. And they were just, I mean, sick about what happened, they said, when they heard about that. So this lady is no different. So let me just start out and read the letter. It's a little bit long, but I'll try to hurry on it. She says, I've thought about you, all three of you, with your guns pointed at Lavoy Finicum. The video still haunts me. I would have been the first one to give you the benefit of the doubt. I was raised around law enforcement. I know good men in law enforcement. But that changed for me, as it did thousands of Americans, with the events that unfurled in Oregon, as I felt utterly stunned at what I viewed in that video. I watched the grainy version of the video that the FBI administration released of Lavoy Finicum's death, even though I knew that with our technology today, they have better, more clear footage and footage with audio from this event, but you will not release that. It is too incriminating for the FBI. They did this with purpose to deceive the public, and that video would have revealed to the world your actions that day. This footage you did release left people arguing about what they were seeing in the blurry video, rather than to bring their attention to the way that three FBI agents ambushed and murdered an innocent, nonviolent rancher with no criminal history, a man with a large family, a good man, a man who never threatened you. Now, I got to jump in here real quick, though. She probably wrote this a little quicker, a little sooner than maybe she didn't find out all the facts. There's nothing to indicate that FBI agents pulled the trigger at all. The two or three that shot, at least two of the three, were Oregon State Police. The other one I'm not sure about. But anyway, carry on. The FBI had clearly set this up in advance, with stops prepared and dozens of agents ready to end the protest, because 4 weeks of a land grab issues protest was all the patience they could muster. The protesters had left the ranch many times before, and on this day were headed for a meeting to inform ranchers of their rights. You knew that. You stopped the two cars and started shooting at Lavoy's truck full of passengers, unprovoked. They never brandished a weapon against you. Finicum told you he was driving to the sheriff's office for protection from you, the only place he felt safe. You fired on his vehicle. You could have just followed him if you had ever intended to have a peaceful outcome, but that was never your intention. Finicum knew why the local law enforcement wasn't invited to the event, why the local sheriff was intentionally kept at bay. Finicum feared what you would do to him with no local oversight. The sheriff of Grant County, just over the county line where you ambushed him, valued constitutional rights, and Finicum knew the sheriff would never approve of an ambush on the highway and an execution of a protester. A tax-paying citizen who loved America could not trust you and fled for his life because he knew you could murder him and get away with it. Let that sink in. When Finicum got out of his vehicle with his hands up, within seconds you gathered around him and shot him in the back. You shot him in the back. Who would carry out such a cowardly deed? Who would follow orders to shoot a rancher with his hands up and shoot him in the back seconds after getting out of his vehicle? The three of you would do this. What were you thinking? How do you reconcile this in your head and in your heart? No talking? Not one attempt at a peaceful negotiation? At the refuge, all he did was talk to you. He never threatened you. His hands were up. Did your conscience allow you to shoot him without any reservation? After his lifeless body dropped into the snow, you cared so little for this fellow citizen that you walked around his body and didn't even check his pulse for 15 minutes. Why? Because of your guilt, or because you had such little regard for him or for human life in general? Both of these answers are equally terrifying to me. Moments later, you shot hundreds of rounds of ammunition into Finicum's truck, with scared women inside screaming for help, trying to surrender. You threw gas cans inside the vehicle. Is this how you do it now? Are you sincerely okay with this? Look at what you have become. By a miracle, they survived. Before you hunted him down and silenced him like wild game, Finicum carried out two heroic acts. He turned the blind corner on the highway. He almost ran into your barricade head-on as vehicles and men stood around, standing in the middle of the highway at your stop. He veered to the left on the snowbank to avoid hitting you, to preserve your lives. He then got out of the vehicle with his hands up to divert your attention from his truck with passengers inside so you would stop firing upon them, to preserve their lives. This is the man you surrounded and killed within seconds. You killed a hero. I wonder what has happened to my America, where you could easily tell the bad guys from the good guys. Are you mercenaries now, carrying out executions on demand? Have you realized that you did the bidding of a government that is seeking to violate the property rights and steal the land of your fellow citizens? Do you realize that you are a citizen and that these ranchers are standing up for your rights too? Or have you not realized this? Most Americans won't take the time to do the research to find out that you shot him in the back 2 times before he ever reached for his stomach, the area where you shot him. And your bosses instructed the media to tell everyone he reached for a gun to justify this cowardly act of murder on a fellow citizen. What a pathetic cover-up for your actions that day. I'm asking all three of you who carried out the execution of Finicum to resign. Resign so I can sleep at night with some of my faith in America restored. Resign because I have to know that you will never be allowed to act with force again. I have to know that men like you would not be allowed to continue on as FBI agents. If you are rewarded for this dastardly act, I will lose all faith in our justice system. We need men with a conscience and a soul in law enforcement. We need good men who are there to protect the citizens, your fellow men. You took an oath to defend the Constitution. Did you understand this oath when you excitedly repeated its words to get your badge? It wasn't a promise. It was an oath. An oath to protect and to serve us. Lavoie was one of us. Are you going to protect us, or are you going to protect orders? Even if those orders compel you to disregard someone's constitutional rights in the most brazen and corrupt and evil way, was this you just doing your job so that you could end their protest? Millions of people have died as a result of those just doing their job under Hitler, under Stalin. Is this who you have become? Shooting someone with their hands up because you were told to? You can no longer hide behind the fact that you felt threatened enough to shoot him dead. With a dozen or more of you ready to attack him, the only one that felt threatened was Finicum, I assure you. You murdered an innocent man. Salt of the earth, a man who would have stood up for you and who would have respected you, a man who would have shaken your hand and talked to you about his love for America. You killed him. Let me ask you this. In all of your years in the FBI, how many ranchers have ever threatened you or have ever drawn weapons on you? I'm guessing the thugs you deal with every day do not include ranchers and farmers. How many ranchers over the years have left their working farms to protest over the stealing of another rancher's land and improvements? I'm guessing probably none. Here's the difficult question. After decades of government abuse to ranchers' property rights, how many ranchers have you defended, or aided, or stood for, because you did take an oath to defend the constitutional rights of those in your care? I'm going to guess that you have never stood for any of these men against the abuse of the government. You have become pawns. You're protecting the government's special interests, not the people's. Resign so I can tell my kids to respect the FBI. Resign because I need you. I need to know there are not monsters out there with guns and badges that will do anything that they're told to do, like killing innocent Americans because we could be next. Resign. You may be a fellow citizen, but you are not my fellow American. So there you have it. It's a great letter. I like the way she put that together. I did have a little bit of an issue with some of the things that were said, and I'm going to go find my response to this here. And let's see, how's the fastest way to go about finding it? I should have had it up and ready here for you. Let's see. Getting closer. My computer again is acting real. So here you go. And I admitted it was definitely a good, well-written letter. But like I told her, where in her original post, and I shared this two or three times, I said, I have one issue. If they have to resign instead of being fired and prosecuted, that means that there are others just like them that support what they did. There are more Lon Horiuchis out there. There are others out there with no conscience that will kill on command, just doing their job and like it. No, they shouldn't be allowed to resign. They have to be fired, legitimately investigated, tried, and if found guilty, executed, just like anybody else. No one should be above the law. And that was the issue that I had with her letter. Resigning to me is totally unacceptable. So, let me go here and check. I haven't looked yet. I don't even know how many people's in the chat room. Let me look in here real quick. Radio Doc, sorry you got the phone caller. All right, let's see here. Now there was another one that I saw it. I got a Yahoo News alert just before the show. It said that there were 4 people shot dead and 14 wounded. And then it came up. I think the numbers were changed a little bit. But anyway, this happened at a lawnmower factory in Kansas, and evidently this happened just not too long before Amy's show started, I believe. So, so this guy pulled up outside the office in a van, ran inside, and shot somebody. I didn't read the whole story there. Like I said, it just came in just before the show started there. But let's see. Let me check this out here. Father of 2 clocked into work as a painter at a lawnmower manufacturing firm, XL Industries, in the city of Heston. That was this morning. I guess it was earlier today. But hours later, he left and returned with a high-powered rifle. He has allegedly gunned down victims in 4 or 5 locations and stole a car along the road back to XL Industries at 5 p.m. on Thursday. Stolen car's driver was one of the 3 killed. Witnesses at the office building, 35 miles, okay. It's 3 people were shot dead, 14 injured, 10 critically. If it was a high-powered rifle, I was surprised that there was only 3 dead. Of course, what they're calling a high-powered rifle could be a .22 Magnum, too. Actually, it shows a picture of him here. He's got an AK and a Glock with a .32-round magazine on it. So, anyway. And I don't see... Shows him out in the range playing with his AK there. I don't see an update to this yet, and we'll, I guess, as soon as something comes in, if we see it, we'll let you know. Let me scroll down here just a little bit and get to the bottom of this. Make sure that there's not an update to it. There's a little bit of conflicting information on here. Alright. Alright, I don't see an update to it yet, so we'll just let that go for the time being. Something comes up, we'll break in here in the middle of it and let you know. Alright, let me get my other stuff up here. While I'm waiting for this to happen here, let me once again, as I do every day, remind everyone that we're having personal defense handgun 2 class down in Buckeye, Arizona on the 12th and 13th of March, 2 weeks away, a little over 2 weeks. And we also got a designated rifleman class coming up I've got it set for the 1st and 2nd of April. That's a Friday and Saturday. I'm trying to avoid doing very many of these on Sunday if I can help it. So that's the way it's going to stand now. Depending on what happens between now and then, we may wind up having to move that to the 2nd and 3rd of April. But it's standing right now, Friday and Saturday on the 1st and 2nd. Let me tell you a little bit, before we get into this other stuff, let me tell you a little bit about that designated rifleman class. This is not it's not a sniper course. It's something in between the quintessential rifleman in a group, in a unit, in a militia, in any group of people, it doesn't matter. And those people are ever so important. But there comes a time sometimes when somebody may be just, and it may not even be somebody, it might be something, like vehicles or fuel tanks, whatever the case may be, that's a little out of range for the average AR-15 or the average AK or something like that. So we need a couple of designated riflemen that have a rifle that's a little more accurate, not a sniper rifle. We're not looking for something that's heavy, specialized, expensive, and very very specialized in nature, which limits its effectiveness in some other types of situations. So the designated rifleman is something that goes out, depending on which source you look at, it may go out as far as 800 yards or so. Ours is at 500. I think that 99% of anything that we're going to need to do as a, collectively, is going to be inside of 500 yards. Will an AR shoot 500 yards? Of course it will. But there's not a lot of poop left when it gets there. Can you hit a man at 500 yards? Oh, absolutely. With an AR, you damn right you can. But you're probably not going to have the desired result. And if you're shooting at vehicles and stuff like that, you can pretty well forget it with that .22 caliber bullet. You might make some dents here and there. You might penetrate some of the lighter stuff, but mostly you're going to be wasting ammo. So in the designated rifle class, I like for, but you could take it with any centerfire rifle that you choose, semi-automatic, pump, bolt action will be the most popular. These are rifles that are going to be more of a sporter weight rifle, something like the regular hunting rifles that are in, the Savage 110, Winchester Model 70, the Remington 700, which is my favorite. Any of those, the Savage as well, the Model 10, I don't think would necessarily fit in. And there's nothing saying you can't have a heavy barrel in it, but ideally it would like to be something that you can pirate ammo from some of your compadres out there. And something that doesn't require, premium or match-grade ammunition. You want to be able to wreak havoc on a target out to 500 yards, which isn't terribly difficult with a little bit of practice and a little bit of coaching. So that's what the designated rifleman is. It's not anybody that runs around in a ghillie suit. It's not anybody that works in teams of two. It's just an extra guy in the squad there that has a rifle that will reach out and touch someone a little farther than what everybody else has got. And shooting at 500 yards does change things. And, out to about, anybody with the average, I'll call it an assault rifle, battle rifle, can do pretty good out to 250 yards. After it passes 250, a lot of the guys that don't practice and stuff, and I know a lot of you just kind of scoff at this, say, well, that's a piece of cake. Well, it is a piece of cake for those of us that practice and shoot that far. But once you get out past 300, you start losing people pretty fast as far as being accurate enough to do something. Yeah, you can shoot, you know, two or three times, walk it in, and eventually, you know, get a decent hit on your target. But you may want something a little more precise than that. You may want to do something a little more effective than... You may not have the time, nor would you desire to make the noise, take the time, give your position away, to walk shots in out to 400, 500, 600 yards. So, in comes the designated rifleman who makes that first shot count out to 500 yards or so. So that's what this class is all about. And there won't be too much involved in the way of tactics and stuff. There'll be some, but it's like I said, it is not a sniper class. It's not even. It's not meant to be. It's not going to be. It's not ever going to be. They're two totally separate animals: the sniper and the designated rifleman. So. And our other programs moving along here. I told you about the hotel program here. We're looking at getting some additional hotels. We're waiting on word from another one. There are three towns here, fairly close in pretty much a almost an equilateral triangle, not quite. And that is Springerville, Arizona. And Sholo, the Sholo Pine Top Lakeside area, and then Snowflake Taylor. And we're going to choose one hotel in each of these towns and give them the opportunity to host some of our classes. And what that's meant to be mutually beneficial for them and for us, so that we draw people in to their hotel, give discounts to the guests, and also still have these classes open to the public as well. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and we've already got one committed, one sounded real positive. We should hear from them pretty shortly. And we've got here in about five or six days, we're going to talk to two more. So looking forward to that. I think it's going to be neat. So, as neat as that is, I think what we'll do right at this very moment is take a little break, and I'll be back in a minute.
It's amazing how you can speak right to my heart. Without saying a word, you can light up the dark. Try as I may, I could never explain what I hear when you don't say a thing. The smile on your face lets me know. Said between your heart and mine. say it best when you say nothing at all.
Are you going to agree? Our freedoms are waning and we'll lose our liberty, slipping one by one until there's nothing left to see. Are you willing to stand with me? Are you just going to let it be? The ranchers are first, but brother, next it may be me. We all stand together or we'll hang separately. Are you going to the tree? Are you willing to be free? It won't get any easier to regain lost liberty. Strange things are happening in this land that once was free. So, brother, I ask you, are you going to stand by me?
And on the eighth day, God made the farmer. But he was not done. He looked down on the wilds of his untamed earth and said, I need someone who will never be broken. And so his greatest work began. First he filled their belly full of guts and their hearts full of try. Then he called them a cowboy. He needed someone who could handle a horse, teach them, tame them, but never break them. Someone whose soul needed the saddle and would not change with the world around them. So God made a cowboy. He needed someone who could find a hot bull in a 100-section pasture, ride a bronc, hold a family together, read a brand, let wrongdoings go, and pull a tight cinch. God needed someone who didn't mind dusty cow pens, smoking branding irons, long days, and cold nights. So God made a cowboy. It had to be someone who could make a living with their rope, cow dog, and a few good horses. Someone who would never know a 40-hour week nor care to. He needed to create a proud man, one who would take a stand and whose greatest compliment would be to have his kids called handy. So God made a cowboy. But after he created the cowboy, he was far from done. While his creation was tough and untamed, they need more than just a good horse to share their name. And no ordinary woman would understand the cowboy. God needed to create a woman who didn't want store-bought roses by the dozen, but rather wild flowers, seldom picked and sweet cowboy loving. He needed someone who could take a good custom in the working pens, love unconditionally, and forgive. Someone who could open her own doors, sweep tack room floors, look past muddy boots into kitchen floors, make a home, hold her own, and have an eye for a good horse. Someone who didn't need lavish and flattery, but would find joy in a spring-born colt. Someone who could raise babies, fix fence, patch jeans, and never waver in the hard times of cowboy life. So God made a cowboy's wife. And when God fashioned the cowboy and his wife, he made them in his exact image and likeness, and blessed them for all their earthly life.
Okay, are you ready? Here's Colt Reynolds with another maximum dose of truth and common sense on the shooting bench.
They say heaven's at the end, but so far it's been hell. And there's fire on the mountain, lightning in the air. Told in them hills that it's waiting for me
there. Okay. We're back. And there's a couple of comments in the, and welcome back to the shooting bench, by the way. There's a couple of comments in the chat room as we were going into the break there. And I agree with, I forgot who it said, it might have been B.B. Burner. But said just knowing where to hold, knowing what you're, you know, where it's going to hit out there, that you can slow people down, you can stop them, and certainly that's a fact, and it's also a volley fire is a commonly used tactic where these rifles, and it even goes back to bow and arrow days. You know, if you've ever watched Braveheart, you see volley fire where the sky, you know, turns black with arrows. Somebody's gonna hit something. I mean, there's no way around it. Now you can't say, well, I see that guy over there with the mohawk haircut and red kilt. That's the one I'm gonna get. No, what you're gonna do is you're gonna raise that up same as everybody else and cut loose there, and somebody's arrow is gonna hit that guy with the red kilt probably. And same thing with, you know, 1,000-yard ladder sights on SKSs and AKs. That doesn't mean that you're going to take that gun by yourself and sit out there and rest it across a fence post out there and take a good, careful aim and press that trigger carefully and hit one man out there at 1,000 meters. Ain't going to happen. If you do, it will be sheer luck. But if you get a company of men that knows their guns and knows to put their sight up like that, and you see another company of men coming across the valley over there, and, you know, 100 of you fire at the same time with that same elevation in your rifle and know what the distance is, you're going to hit somebody. Okay, that is not what the designated rifleman class is for. That is the one guy in your squad that can take his rifle. And we don't want to just hit somebody. We may have a certain particular target, whether it's a person or a vehicle or something like that. But we have to get in there a little bit closer, and we can't just guess on, we've got this sight at 1,000 meters. We all shoot at the same time. Maybe we'll hit it. We need one guy. You've got one chance before you give everything away to hit that lead guy or that set off those explosives or hit that propane tank or whatever the case may be. So, but yeah, I agree very much with the comments in there. Now, what I was looking for here, and it may be gone. Maybe somebody took it down here. But there was a pretty good interview with Jeanette Finnicum. First time that she has talked in public since Lavoie was killed. And she had a pretty good interview on there, and I can't find it now. For some reason, they may have taken it down. Let me look one other place here. Let's try this here. See if it's over here. I mean, I'm sure I could find it, because I'm sure enough people shared it to their individual pages that it's bound to be out there somewhere. I'm going to scroll down through here just for a second and look. And here it is. All right, here we go. And this is about 10 minutes long, but I want you to hear it. And like I said, we're probably run over a little bit again tonight, but that's okay. It's my show. I can do what I want to with it. So I don't know how many of you have heard this interview, but she did really well. And I think she did an outstanding job. And as soon as this loads up here real quick, I'm going to play it. And then I'm going to read her latest update on her website here, which is only, you know, takes 20 seconds to read it. So if we can get through this part, here we go. It's coming. I promise. It's getting closer and closer. And there we go. Maybe. Maybe not. Like we've had a this is Dennis Michael Lynch, by the way, who is interviewing Jeanette. And Jeanette is, she's an incredible woman. She's very, very strong.
Welcome back.
There we go.
On the phone with me right now is the wife of Arizona.
Oh, come on. Don't do this to me.
Arizona rancher, Lavoie Finicum.
Thank you.
Lavoie was shot dead in Oregon a few weeks ago by authorities. You may remember seeing it. It was on television quite often, but unfortunately the media has forgot about the story. I have not. Unfiltered has not. Newsmax has not. And we are going to continue sticking with this story and things about the BLM. On the phone with me right now, making her first, if you will, media appearance since the death of her husband, is Jeanette Finicum. Jeanette, thank you for taking the time and being so brave in joining me today.
Thank you, Dennis, for having me.
Okay. Last night, you and I spoke about this interview, and I asked you first and foremost about the autopsy results that you received back because the family hired somebody to do a private autopsy. You told me that you could not share the results of that autopsy until the feds released theirs. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and I will respect that, and I think everybody else watching does as well. That being said, you also told me that your lawyer was up in Oregon. And I asked you, hey, is he going to check out the SUV that Lavoie was driving? And you told me...
I said that he was denied access to view the truck and will not be able to unless we go further with other legal matters.
How are you ever going to know what exactly happened that day if your lawyer does not have access to information such as what took place with that truck?
Well, I don't have to know all the ins and outs legally. I know who my husband is, and I know who he was, and so I know what happened in his final moments. I know what kind of man he was. My children know what kind of man he was, and so we can rest assured and know those things for ourselves.
All right, well, let me ask you, Jeanette, a question. I want to take you back to that snowy day in Oregon. You say that you know your husband, and there's no doubt you'll know him better than anybody else does. What happened? Why did your husband drive towards the men and then veer off to the snow? I mean, in your estimation, you've seen the video. What do you think took place?
I think that when he took off, he was trying to get to the sheriff's. He said as much. And as he was going around the curve, I don't believe he expected a roadblock. He had to make split-second decisions. He had to decide whether to go to the right or go through the middle or turn to the left, where it seemed to be the least risky. And so I believe that in those couple of seconds, he chose to go that direction to save the people in the truck. I know that he dashed out to defuse the situation. I know that with every part in my soul. I know that. I know that he was trying to protect those two women and Ryan Bundy in the back seat of that truck. Nobody runs out of their truck with their hands up expecting to be shot. You know, what is it that our country has turned into? Do we believe that mere words justify the use of deadly force? Do we believe that peaceful actions justify the use of deadly force? Do we believe that two hands up in surrender justifies the use of deadly force?
Go ahead, Jeanette. I was going to ask you a question. Do you believe that your husband was murdered?
I believe he was taken out.
You do?
Yes, I do.
Why do you think, I tend to agree with everything that you say. I mean, I didn't know Lavoie, so I can't attest to what you're saying about the fact that he was the sort of man who would protect the other people in his car before himself. But in talking to you, I'm going to take your word for it because you seem like one of the most honest people I've ever spoke to on the phone. I told you that last night. And so in that being said, I watched this video and I see a man, if I'm taking your description of him, which is a man who's going to worry about the people who are in that car before he worries about himself. And so he jumps out, he's got his hands up, he's in deep snow, and I don't believe he was reaching for a gun. Do you believe he was reaching for a gun?
No, I don't believe that. I don't believe that. I believe that there were other things going on that we won't know until we have sound. We won't know until we have further information, and which we are actively working on getting. And we are going to move forward and are actively engaged in pressing forward with a wrongful death suit.
Because you think, why do you think he was taken out, using your words?
And maybe that's a poor choice of words. I believe that he was killed, and I believe that it wasn't necessary for him to be killed. I believe that he had his hands up. He was surrendering. I've heard from so many different people that the hard stop that was there, the kill stop they call it, wasn't necessary. These people weren't doing anything illegal, you know, maybe a misdemeanor and fleeing from the first stop. But they had an ambush blockade style trap, you know, stop. And you know, here they are saying that they were stopped just because they had a traffic stop. You don't have a traffic stop and go around the corner and have that hard stop, kill stop that they call it, blockade. You don't do that for a normal traffic stop. So I believe that they were out there, they were prepared, they had thought this through, they had trimmed tree lines, they had done all of these things to make sure that whoever came through there did not make it through. And by the grace of God, those three people that were in the back of that truck were saved. They were saved. And what? I believe my husband had a great deal to do with that.
By jumping
out of the truck with his hands up, trying to defuse the situation.
I have 5.5 minutes left. I want to get a bunch of other things in here. Yes or no, and a little description if you like. Was your husband a violent man?
No. He wasn't. He didn't so much as even have a traffic ticket on his record. He never went over the speed limit. He always talked to me about keeping the speed limit. he was a kind, loving, gentle man. He was giving of his time to our family and to others, and whoever needed him, he was always there.
Let me change direction for 1 second. I want to talk about the impact this has all had on you. You have a ranch in Arizona, am I correct?
Yes.
Are you now, are you alone there?
I am with my oldest, my youngest daughter who's still in high school. She's a senior this year.
So it's just you and your daughter?
Yes.
How are you going to take care of the ranch without Lavoie?
That's a difficult one. That's something we're still trying to put together and trying to put a plan together and trying to figure out how to manage that.
Is your world, I mean, you sound very strong on the phone, which, amazing. Is your world shattered?
Our world is completely different. Our world, there's so much of us that left that day with him, and there's so much that he did and took care of, and there's so much of him that is missing in all of us now, and so much that we will not have the opportunity to have with him. Our grandchildren will not know him, and it's been an overwhelming sorrow. But I have the gift that God has given me, the surety of knowing that I will be with him again someday. And I'm grateful for my belief in God and in the plan of happiness and that we will have eternity together. But,
I wanna
here on earth by yourself is a very difficult thing to do.
We only have 3 minutes left, so I want to try to get in as much as we possibly can. When you're alone at night and you're thinking about his absence, do you wish that he didn't go to Oregon, or do you still stand behind what he did?
I stand behind my husband 100%.
I asked you last night about the BLM and fines that you owe them, and they are going to come after those fines eventually. You know it. I know it. And I asked you if it means to have to save your ranch and to be able to pay your bills, will you pay those fines to the BLM?
I haven't made that decision yet. But I can't in all good conscience see myself doing something different than he did. But I have not made a final decision about what I'm going to do.
What do the American people, what do they not know about the Bureau of Land Management?
Well, I think they're learning a lot right now where they are an overreaching, unconstitutional organization. They have no authority, yet they have been given the authority to go in and police us out there on the range. And I think that we as the American people need to stand up and put our government back in check within the confines of the Constitution.
We have 1 minute left. I mean, yesterday all over the internet there were stories about the FBI was closing in on you and they were going to take your cattle and they were going to shut you down. Was that just rumor or is there really activity going on? And by the way, we have less than a minute.
That was a rumor. However, it was a credible person telling me about that, about the trucks heading out my direction. And so we had to check it out. It was very nerve-wracking there for a minute, but we were able to find my cows safe and sound. And I just have to say really quickly how much I appreciate everybody who has stood by our family and has supported us and came to my aid yesterday. I was so amazed at all the people that came to help. And I just want to thank you. I want to thank all of you.
I have less than 30 seconds. You got to tell me this in 20 seconds, Jeanette. When you take a look at the way the media has covered your husband's story, not including us, are you disappointed? 10 seconds.
Yes, I am disappointed in the way they portrayed such a good man.
And how?
Because he doesn't fit their narrative.
And what is their narrative?
Terrorist.
Thank you, Jeanette. We'll have you back. Good luck to you. Don't go
Thank
away.
You.
We'll be back.
All right, there you go. There was Jeanette's first interview since the murder. And you can tell that she's got a lot of indecision in her life and a lot of things going on. So I have had the opportunity to help a little bit with some of those things. We've got she sent a message out for those of you that are not on Facebook or not following her on Facebook. She said, hello, friends. Things seem almost eerily quiet here in the house since LaVoy's been gone with just me and my daughter now, but it's comforting to know that I have both family and friends that are literally within shouting distance from the house if I need anything at all. I also feel much better about the ranch and cattle now that we are putting a ranch hand/security guy in place to help. Maybe I can get some rest now. Thank you all for your continued love and support. May God bless you in all your continued efforts for liberty. Jeanette Finnegan, One Cowboy's Wife. So there you go, and I will be helping her with those things here in the immediate future, and glad to do it. Hey, there's an event going on, and I don't have the page pulled up here right now. I can probably get it for you in just a minute. Let me look, because it's an event in Utah. Some of you might be able to make this, and I'm not sure. I just have not got the means to make this one unless I hit the lottery or something that's very significant happens here in the next, tomorrow. Because if I make it up there, I'll have to leave tomorrow about no later than noon if I were to go up there. So it's unlikely to happen. But let's see if I can find the event announcement here, and I'll let those of you know that can make it. It's going to be a pretty good event. We're going to have Victoria Sharp's going to be there, unless something happens. A couple of the Finnecombs are going to be there. Jeanette's not going to be there, but a couple of her daughters will be. And there's a possibility that the governor of Utah will be there. And one or more of the Bundys might be there. There's a lot of things going on in the Bundys' life right now also. So it's not for sure that that's going to happen. But what you can do, if you're the praying type, you can sure say a prayer for all the Bundys and all the patriots that have turned into political prisoners in the various places where they're spread out, everywhere from Portland to wherever others. Several places. Maybe they may all be in Portland now. I don't know. They were spread out there for a little while. And I can't find that announcement. Let me look one more place here and see if... why can't I find it? It should be on this page. We're run past our time a little bit, but that's okay. Well, so much for that, I guess. I thought I'd be able to find it, but I don't see it. Anyway, there's an event going on. It's going to be in or near Tooele, Utah. And you may have noticed back every once in a while, there for a while, we had Bill Critter Gitter come on the show in the chat room and visit with us a little bit. Well, Critter Gitter is putting on this event, and I think it's going to be an excellent deal. I wish I could make it, but I don't see it happening. So, anyway, I'm going to get on out of here now. We'll see you tomorrow. And for those of you that are new, that are just coming in for the first time, I know there's at least one I saw on Facebook that just come in for the first time tonight. We get a new one, every day or two we get a couple of new ones. On Friday nights, we have very little news unless it's something pretty urgent. And we devote most of our time to classic country music and just trying to wind down a little bit and start our weekend out a little bit without all the violence and corruption and heartbreak that goes on around the country and around the world, and just try to relax and start our weekend out a little better, and then get back and destroy all of it starting Monday. So that's what'll be happening here tomorrow night. And tomorrow's also a 2-hour show, if you didn't know that. So from 8 o'clock Pacific time until 10 o'clock Pacific time, we'll be on here with classic country music with a show called Liberty Lounge, and we'll see you here for that tomorrow. And I am out of here. Thank you all for joining me.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Shooting Bench. Please join Cope Monday through Friday for the most politically incorrect firearms information show on talk radio.
Lead, follow, or get the hell out of the way. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for you to decide who you are. Somebody should call them. Somebody should write a letter. Somebody should try and stop that. Somebody should do something. I challenge you to look in the mirror and tell me what you see. If there's somebody there, that would be you. It's time for you to do something. There is no doubt that the Constitution is hanging by a thread. It's not going to wait for us much longer.